Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Tim Mikelashvili, and I'm the host of the All Out Coach podcast, which we are broadcasting live today on LinkedIn, YouTube, and Facebook. It's being multi-streamed. As you know, those of you who follow me, All Out Coach is the place where we're fascinated about what the future holds for us and the next generation. So we essentially talk about innovation in the same context of our legacy. Today, I'm very excited because I have a bright, intelligent, dynamic guest. Her name is Tiffany Bova. She's a Global Chief Growth Officer at Salesforce, the author of the Wall Street Journal best-selling book, Growth IQ. She's also been an executive at Gateway before and has a newsletter, which I hope you will subscribe to, called Think Forward, that I read all the time myself as well. And today we'll be discussing the impact of the data culture on the worlds of business as well as the healthcare sector. So thanks for joining us, and make sure to comment and ask us questions. Hi, Tiffany. I'm so glad you're here with us today.
Oh, thank you, Tim, for having me.
Sure. In addition to all of your accomplishments and the positions you've held, what strikes me often is how much energy and how dynamic you are. And my first question has to be, where do you find your source of energy today, which is so relevant to all of us?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm going to have to answer that two ways, actually, because I'm going to say my pre-pandemic energy and now my, you know, still at the moment, predominantly working from home energy. When I'm on the road, 2019, I flew 275,000 miles, six continents, 100 keynotes, meeting with executives around the world. That's a very different kind of energy than doing a lot of that work now in my home studio. So I'd say that for me, it's all about purpose and being mindful of how you spend your time and where and when you take breaks. I'm really good about saying, you know, I can't just go back to back all day. I will put breaks in and go for a walk, you know, in the neighborhood, whatever it might be. But I'm about to get back on the road again. So it'll be interesting to now rebalance myself. I'm a little bit out of travel shape. So we'll see. We'll see how tired I am in, you know, 30 or 60 days after I've had a handful of trips.
The great tips there. Yes, I try to do that myself, but this is a question that I get all the time and one that I ask myself. So to introduce a little bit my vision of data or my understanding of data culture, I want to tell you, Tiffany, that many years ago, as I reflect, when I was a teenager, I called the NFL in order to understand how the quarterback rating was calculated, because I wanted to understand how relevant is that quarterback rating to their actual performance. Does it really differentiate the best quarterback versus others, let's say, right? So, and this was before the days of the internet, all right? And so I received a response from the NFL in the form of a fax, you know? So I learned what that formula was. But I often say that, you know, pictures tell a story, but words and numbers often tell us how it ends. How do you think that the pharma industry, from your perspective, or the healthcare sector, is capitalizing on data in order to drive its decisions?
Well, that's a very complicated question for me to answer. And there's a couple reasons why. I think when you look back over the last 18 months since the lockdown really kind of hit, let's call it March of 2020, you've seen this acceleration in digital transformation we had not seen in business over the course of like the previous decade. So we saw it over 3 to 6 months, you know, a lot of transformation, if not more than we'd seen in the decade across all industries. And I'm just going to pick a small business like a restaurant. You know, we used to go into a restaurant, you might go every other week with your family or every week with your family on a Tuesday. And then all of a sudden it's shut down. And the restaurant owner is like, well, how do I get in touch with those people who used to come in every Tuesday, because I know what they want. And oh, I don't even have my menu online, and I don't have any relationship with Grubhub or Uber Eats or whatever it might be to deliver the food. I don't even know how to communicate to my staff and in a way that allows them to know, you know, can they come in? When can they come in? How are we going to continue to work? I'm just picking restaurant. So imagine what happened at that moment when, you know, healthcare shuts down, right? And all those surgeries and all those doctor's appointments and everything that was scheduled kind of came to a screeching halt. But what also has transformed is the expectations of consumers, and I'm going to use consumer very specifically in this answer, is that consumers' expectations in their super consumer life of now doing everything from home, educating their kids, working, even potentially having doctor's appointments, whatever it might be, those expectations now have threaded over into all industries. So if it was grocery shopping, now they're like, it's so easy to order groceries. Why can't I do this over here? Or I'm going to set an appointment, something done in my house. Why is it as easy to do with my doctor? And mm-hmm. so those expectations that have now been pulled from other industries, I feel like, you know, healthcare has made huge strides, you know, on the obvious healthcare side. But let's talk about the relationship between the doctor, the hospital, and the patient. Is the patient experience as evolved and mature, and has it had as much innovation as the customer experience has in the consumer side? And that's where I think there's a tremendous amount of information, and data is at the foundation of that. I remember when you mentioned I was working for Gateway Computers. I'm going to date this. This was way back in 2004, but in 99 and 2000, right when Y2K was happening, I was deploying one of the very first technology stacks that was going to manage and track HIPAA compliancy back in 98, 99. And I remember that conversation. It was out at Loma Linda Hospital here in Southern California. And I remember it really, really well. Fast forward 21 years, still data is very difficult to be shared, you know, between doctors to provide a better patient experience. And so I think that in a highly regulated industry like healthcare, it's hard for you to just say, well, if you can do it over here in retail, why can't we do it in healthcare? But there are things we could be doing better to just improve at the layer without sharing data, but just talk mm-hmm. about that experience. And then you have to solve the sort of big data problem, which is a totally different conversation.
Yeah. You know, the fact that our industry is so regulated, and as a lot of my network, probably the majority of those who listen to All Out Coach are in a healthcare or are related to a healthcare field somehow, I think that's been a major barrier, although there is some, innovation and important movement, you know, towards featuring operations and data, you know, as new departments are being implemented and, initiated in my industry. So I want to interrupt before we continue our discussion here and just acknowledge a lot of those who are joining us. Tiffany, Stan Phelps from IBM, an executive keynote speaker. So he's joining the conversation, as well as Sazan. He's greeting us from Canada, joining us from Canada. And also Dr. Talia Miron-Schatz, who's an expert on medical decision-making. In fact, I'm going to cite one of her studies that she introduced me to recently on a previous episode. And then we have a comment from Stan Phelps here. So thank you, Stan. So I know that you consult many different organizations and you help them drive that customer experience. You know, and you often speak about B2E, right? Business to experience instead of B2B, right? Or B2C. So I think that, as you mentioned, now healthcare consumers is the new trending term, where patients are now more demanding than ever, right, in terms of their care, and they're exposed to so much data out there, yet they don't have the training and often are not able to interpret that information or misinformation that surfaces online, right? And so, in fact, Dr. Talia Miron-Schatz, she mentioned a recent study in which over 2,000 physicians were surveyed, and they were asked, where did you prescribe a medication or procedure that you otherwise didn't think was necessary? And they said yes. And 80% said so because they were afraid of being sued. But 59% also said that they didn't prescribe the right medication or procedure because the patients demanded them. So that brings me to the question of, you know, how do businesses now use data to attract not just attention alone, but the context their understanding of decisions that they have to make? Because most of the metrics that I see in the data are these external triggers, I think, that kind of attempt to try to get our attention, but not necessarily the context, which allows us to consolidate the information and have that deep understanding. How can we target that context rather than just attention using data?
Tiffany. Yeah, that was a lot. Here's what I'd say is that there's a crisis of trust collectively across the globe, you know, and in the B2B world, Edelman has a trust barometer. And over the last couple of years, trust had been declining from a business perspective. Like, do you trust that your data is going to be used appropriately? Do you mm-hmm. believe if something goes wrong, that company will tell you there's been a hack, or, you know, your data has been taken, yeah. or something has gone wrong with the product? Are they going to let you know that there's a recall? Like, trust is a very big word. And so I'd say, first and foremost, you know, anybody that's using data, they have to create some kind of framework by which they communicate to, in this case, right, their patients or their customers. What data are you collecting? How is it being used? Where is it being shared? You know, so all of that information, you know, because when you say to somebody, well, that's not HIPAA compliant, how many patients, I mean, I kind of basically understand it, but I don't understand it to the depths. And so is it maybe something that doctors can actually educate their own patients with and communicate to them of what is HIPAA compliance? What do you do about it? And really proactively stay in front of that. Because if the trust increases, you know, before they walk in the door, when that doctor then says, you know, hey, I think you should be taking this, not that, based on that study you just mentioned, they might be more likely to go, okay, I trust you. Because if they're just like, look, I did a, you know, 12 a.m. to 6 a.m. Google search to, you know, Dr. Google and try to figure out what I'm supposed to do. And then I say back to the doctor, I want to take this, not that. I'm basing it on maybe information that is not even accurate and valid. And so I think specifically in the healthcare industry, especially today, it is all about trust. And how do you build that trust? And how do you use data to create a more trust based relationship on value? And in this case, really communicating and almost over communicating. Because look, I would say, just like any business, you want to have customers who value you, and you want to make sure that there's sort of mutual respect. And so if you have to walk away and say, maybe this is not the right relationship, that's not a bad thing, right? You definitely want to have a trust-based relationship, and data is an amazing way for you to use that as the tip of the spear of the conversation, like I just described. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think my doctor's ever communicated with me, here is what HIPAA, here's what I do, here's what, you know, now they've moved to digital records. What does that even mean? I still have to go request paper records from a past doctor to get it to my existing doctor. Well, that doesn't sound very digital to me. So, you know, I don't understand. So I think that there's a lot of education that can go there. And back to your, you know, previous point of words can tell a story, but data tells how the story ends. Well, talk about that data that you may only know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those episodes and instances of going from one physician to another are ones that I talk about a lot. Regardless of the data and the electronic medical records that are out there, there's so many gaps, particularly with the policies, the insurance plans that you have to change every year. And it's really the patients that ultimately end up suffering, because their care is not always continuous as you go from one provider or one healthcare system to the next. And these are questions that I continue to ask. You mentioned earlier that you had some experiences with virtual medicine. I did as well during the pandemic. And they were quite helpful, actually, and efficient. They eliminated my meniscus-related pain, for example, just by doing an exercise that somebody, a physical therapist, taught me over video cam. In this world of working remotely, what are some technologies, applications? I know you mentioned Google, I don't know, Slack, some other ones that you find effective, or any tips you have to engage team members remotely?
Well, the first thing I'd say here, you know, especially around what we saw over the last 18 months, was this sort of renaissance of something we call the appointment economy, and making appointments in areas that you otherwise would not, right? You make a doctor's appointment, you know, you make an appointment to see your attorney, you make it, you know, there are things that you will make an appointment for naturally, but, you know, going and picking up your holiday tree, or going and doing, you know, walking through a pumpkin patch and, you know, doing a Halloween event or something like that, where you would just show up. Now you maybe have to make appointments because of safety, you know, health for the employees, as well as the patrons, like making sure everything's okay. Well, you know, in the medical world, like appointments are critical. And time is money for the doctor, but time is also valuable to the patient. And so, you know, one of my biggest complaints is always, look, if you're going to be an hour late and I'm going to sit in your waiting room, could you just communicate to me and let me know you're going to be an hour late? And then just say, do you want to keep this appointment? Yes or no. And I can make the decision if I want to sit there for an hour or not. And if it's no, I don't, I want to reschedule and I want to reschedule right now. And so, you know, that doesn't happen. But I will tell you, we've seen once again over the last 18 months, you know, if you think about the service field, service industry, I'm going to come fix your washer. Used to be, we'll be there Tuesday. It's like, well, what time? No. We'll be there Tuesday. Okay. Well, that's not helpful. And then it became kind of 8 to noon, and then it was noon to five. And, you know, then it might be noon to two, and the windows got smaller and smaller, where hopefully you've noticed across, you know, many industries that now it's, I'm going to communicate to you when your technician is on his way, 10 minutes away, his or her way, right? 10 minutes away. Here's what we ask you to do. Only one person in the house, wear a mask, whatever it might be, say yes, so that they will then show up and know you understand what needs to happen. That's huge strides. But go back to that example I just gave, you know, time is money. And so why am I waiting? And so when I was saying to you, let's forget the, you know, HIPAA compliancy, and the high regulation, I'm just talking about my time. Like if you could just be better at that. And so going back to your question of sort of video healthcare, boy, my doctor wasn't late on any of those video calls. On time, 10, 10:15, boom, right? Because up, gotta go. Next one, he's on, you know, 10:15 to 10:30. Up, gotta go. But when it's in the office, you know, you're, it's a little out of control. The conversation gets long. You start talking about other things. And then 5 minutes turns into 10 minutes, turns into 20 or 30 based on where you are in the day of their schedule. So I feel like there's some benefits in that. It's short. I don't have to spend a half hour driving there and I don't have to sit in a waiting room. So now even something that simple, that's a big improvement for service, right? I mean, right away, I think people complain that like, you know, I always have to wait, or the, you know, the one everyone talks about, I fill out the, all my information on paper every time when I come in. Well, do you not know who I am? I don't know. I've been here for 10 years. I come twice a year. Like what? I need to tell you my birth date again. I mean, you should ask about insurance. And outside of that, everything's the same, right? And so I think that's why I was saying at the beginning, like understanding those experiences on the consumer space, what things have changed that healthcare could apply that doesn't reach the level of HIPAA regulation and compliancy, right? We're just talking about it, that the patient journey, coming into a hospital, leaving a hospital, you know, getting paperwork, follow-up, any of those things that can be automated using technology, whether it's Salesforce, we have Health Cloud, whether it's using something like Slack, which we acquired, you know, from a collaboration and communication standpoint, there is no shortage of technology. The challenge is getting people to use it.
You just painted some very realistic pictures there that take place and in the healthcare setting that I think you, you spoke out for many patients and healthcare professionals, I think. And ultimately, it's the extent to which virtual healthcare is reimbursed also that also is going to determine how readily it is for access for patients and the incentives that physicians have. And I know that physicians and healthcare professionals, they're advocating for more, for increasing different value-based models versus just looking at providing healthcare as a service. And just like you mentioned, I think virtual technology has increased value-based services. So I want to take one quick pause to make sure to remind those because in the audience to ask questions. This is a very, very rare, unique opportunity. I was looking forward to meeting with you, Tiffany, and for sharing your perspective, your your individual perspective on healthcare and business as well. Because in the last few years, I think many of us, I certainly am trying to influence other leaders in medical, in pharma, in the healthcare sector, to integrate some of the best from different industries, from technology, with purpose, in a deliberate, you know, with intentionality as well. So that's why I just wanted to take a quick pause. Any other comments before we move on, Tiffany?
The one thing I'd say back to you saying, you know, trying to figure out what's going to be the reimbursement from for a video versus an in-person meeting, et cetera. I mean, those are all valid points. But I would also say that as you can become more productive, as you can become more efficient, as you become more connected and agile, you absolutely have the opportunity to actually provide more care, not less care. And so, you know, if you're only able to see 8 patients a day, which I know that is not a reality, most doctors see way more than that, but let's just, you know, pick a number, 8. And you start to automate and figure out, how do I make that time allocation? When is it a digital first appointment with a patient versus an in-person? When and why? How do you communicate that? What do you do, right? Those kinds of understanding goes a long way, so that me as a patient, I understand what it's, why now, you know, did he cancel or she cancel, and then they don't rebook, and then, well, it was video or it was in person and now it's video. Like, I'm just sort of, I'm at the mercy of whatever decision is made, versus how do you collaborate with your patients? Ask them what they want. If you're in a huge hospital, a huge facility, that's, you know, have a little less control. But if you have your own practice and there's something you can do there, understand what you find yourself as a great experience in other industries, and how could you potentially apply that to your business as well?
Yeah, that's a great point. I'm taking notes as well, simultaneously, by the way, in some of these episodes, particularly those that go live. And so I want to just share that, what you just said there, that, you know, this is an opportunity for healthcare professionals to provide more care than ever using technology and using data. So I read your book, Growth IQ, and you talk about sales optimization there and the need to engage different customers at different times, right, or different stages. So for those of you who are listening, who are executives in the pharmaceutical industry, you know, if you picture that case scenario, case study of a launch of a new product, whether you're in pharmaceuticals or in other industries, what are some tips you have for engaging different customers at different times?
Yeah, listen, I would say if you're listening to this and you know, you're in healthcare or another industry, actually sit in the shoes of your patient customer and map through what it's like to have a first appointment with you. What it's like, you know, where do they have to fill out the paperwork ahead of time? Do they have to print the paper, you know, the paperwork, sign the paperwork? Do they have to fax back the paperwork? You mentioned that sort of, you know, the fax early on to the NFL. Like, right. You know, I got asked to do that about 2 weeks ago. Someone sent me paperwork and said, print it out and fax it back. I'm like, I'll have a fax. Like, so, you know, can I take a picture of it with my phone and send it to you? I mean, it was crazy, right? So we're in almost 2022. So if you actually map that journey, you may find low-hanging fruit that you can fix right away. And so ways to make that initial engagement as you're going out to look for new patients or look for new customers, what you can do to make that process seem much more enjoyable. And then if I asked you, you know, would your patients recommend you? Like, if someone said to me, would you recommend your doctor, you know, your 2 or 3 doctors, I'd be like, boy, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if someone's better or worse, you know, but you have to think about these things. This has happened quite a bit. I'd rather have them say, absolutely, like, this is who you need to go see. Super attentive, you know, allows you to be flexible, digital, really proactive in care, communicates with me in between appointments, whatever it might be. So following that journey and mapping it and finding ways to improve is a great way to also identify where can technology help you, like that, fill out the paperwork before you get here, print it out, and then bring it in. Well, what if they don't have a printer? Print it out and fax it. What if they don't have a fax? You've given them no option other than when they show up, they have to fill out all this paperwork when they first get there. And so, you know, once you understand that journey, I guarantee you will find ways and areas in which you can improve. Now, that's one entire work stream. The next one would be, they're already a patient and now, or a customer, and now they need to book time with you or set up an appointment with you. Now, what does that journey look like? And then you could take it in a lot of directions. If it's, they're going to have a surgery or have a procedure, all the things that have to be communicated pre and post of that, or they have an appointment and, you know, pre and post of that. And so once you start to map those journeys, which are a very marketing term, right, that they go through. So the patient journey has a ton of room for improvement, whether they're new, you know, whether they're in your facility, whether they've just left. You know, I did some work many years ago prior to joining Salesforce. I was a research fellow at Gartner Group, and I was working with a large hospital facility in Texas, a cancer facility, you can figure out who it is. And we were talking about, like, post-care, that they were sending patients home with a laptop so that they could have those video conference calls you know, in the 60 days after cancer treatment and while they were still coming in. Oh, wow. And they would lease those. Now, this was all the way, this was now probably 11 or 12 years ago.
Wow.
So that was really progressive.
Yes.
But their patient care was high. Their satisfaction was really high. Mm-hmm. Care was, you know, that was a time where it was, you know, you don't want to go to that hospital. Let's just say that, right? That's, you just don't want to go there, right? Because of what they specialize in. But if they could make that entire patient experience better for the family and for the patient, you know, look, it was MD Anderson. They just, you know, really pushed the envelope on how do you do that care. So I think that there is opportunities even for very large facilities to really think about the patient and how you can improve that, doing things that they are now. Remember, everybody 18 months ago might not have been as digitally savvy. Today, mm-hmm. almost every age group, even if you're into right. senior care, is much mm-hmm. more digitally savvy because they had to yeah. do everything online. So I think it's a great opportunity now to capitalize on it.
Yeah. Yeah. The physicians themselves, they're now raised on social media platforms. But wearing a different hat now, more of a business hat, let's say, if you, let's say, launch a product, there are different types of customers that I know. For example, Scott Belsky talks about in the messy middle, you know, those customers that initially are willing to pay, then you target those who are more forgiving, he says, and those who are then you expand and diversify those customers. So what are any other business specific types of insights that you have on approaching the launch, you know, or post launch of a product?
Sure. So I'm going to go back to what I said about trust. If you have high uh-huh. levels of trust with your customers, your existing customer base or patient okay. base, right, is more yes. willing, one, to try new products and services from you. They're more willing to forgive you if something goes wrong, right, and be like, oh, mm-hmm. but even though something went wrong, I trust that they will do right by me and I will move on. You've already spent the money on the acquisition of that particular customer or patient. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I would say when the pandemic first hit, I was advising as many people as I could to go back into the base of customers or patients or whomever, whatever definition you want to use, to go there first, to understand what do they need? How can I give them better service? You know, what is it that I currently offer that they're not using? Because the fact that you just mentioned him that you're launching a new product, if you only have one product and you're launching a second, then this doesn't make sense. But if you have multiple products and your average customer only has one, you have a lot more things you can already sell them before you introduce something new. So there are ways in which you can be mm-hmm. better about taking care of the existing base in a mm-hmm. way that makes them feel that you care about them. Now, that's mm-hmm. one whole conversation. The other one is, okay, I'm doing those things over here with the particular, you know, once again, I'm just going to use my doctor. I never yeah. hear from him. I have to call and go, is it time for my annual appointment? And I do it around the same time of the year so that I do everything. And I remember when I do it actually with clock changes, because then it reminds me, okay, these are the things I need to do when the clock changes, you know, mm-hmm. but it's not proactive. I have to chase, right? Oh, it's time for my appointment. Do I need this? Do I need that? When is this? When is that? You know? And so if I had better communication on things I should be thinking about at each birthday. Hey, you're older. You should be thinking about these things. Like, you know, my mm-hmm. birthday, you know what I've already had done. Why not, you know, help me do more with you? So that's that existing. If you're going out and looking for new and trying to attract new with those products and services that you have, what makes you unique and different? I could tell mm-hmm. you right now, 80% of decision-making for customers is on the experience they have with a company or a brand over products. So if products were, you know, I'm buying that from you, so that's what I'm basing my decision on. Now experience is 80% impact to that decision-making. So if you don't have a great experience about finding out about you, what do you specialize in? What are you doing? They will leave you before you ever have a chance to show them how great your products are. So, you know, I would say to you that experience is this new battleground. You've got to find a way to improve that experience regardless of industry. And you can win there. Trust me, you can win there because there's so, we just shared all these experiences. My doctor doesn't do this. This happens. I wait in the waiting right. room. I have to fill out all this. Da, 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 da. There are ways to improve the experience where I would be absolutely steadfastly loyal. The reason I don't change now, it's such a hassle to change. So that's not a bar that you want to set. Like, oh, the reason I keep my patients is because it's so hard to switch doctors. Like, that's not a reason to feel good about your practice. You know, really trying to deliver those great experiences.
Yeah, that's loud and clear, the role of customer experience. Now, we talked a lot about technology and the data. How do you separate the signals from the noise among all that emerging information that's coming out on data culture in order to make sure that the technology that you implement is socially conscious, private, and transparent?
Yeah, I'd say that data and reports are sort of backward looking. The signals allows you to have a little bit more forward looking. And so if you're making all your decisions looking backwards, right? Think about your rearview mirror and think about your windshield, right? Rearview mirror looking backwards, windshield looking forward.
Yeah.
There is a difference. And so do you just always want to be viewing through the rearview mirror, or do you want to be viewing through the windshield? The rearview mirror is going to, you know, help you define, okay, wow, I see that, you know, this is happening behind me. I need to make a different decision. That has value, but only looking back at the data doesn't necessarily. So using data, there's a statement out there that data is the new oil. You cannot pull up to an oil rig and fill up your car. It has to go through the refinery, and the refinery is analytics. And then once it goes through the refinery, you get the petrol or the gasoline to power the business. And those are insights or signals. Then you have to act on them. And it's not that they're going to be 100% right 100% of the time, but you will get smarter and smarter and smarter if you are willing to analyze that data, take those signals and action it. So you may say, wow, I've looked across my patients. This is what's happening. Here are kind of three buckets of types of patients I have. Let me try these two or three things to see which one is going to get them to come in more often or more frequently, or try my new products and services, or consume the content I'm putting out, you know, like the few examples I gave. You will learn, and then you will go on and go on, right? Innovation is all about trying things that are going to fail. And I always say, like, unless it's going to kill somebody, which in this case it might, because if we're talking to the healthcare community, but, or it's illegal, don't do it. But if it's not any, either of those two things, what's the worst that can happen? It doesn't work. You learn from it and you move on.
Yeah. Like Winston Churchill said, I think, right? Success is going from failure to failure without losing enthusiasm.
It's hard. It's hard. Look, I think that technology can be intimidating. New ways of doing things is really difficult. Change is hard. You know, the backbone to any of this that we've just talked about is personal growth. And you have to be interested and willing to try things that you're not comfortable doing, that you don't know the answer to, that might not work. And that isn't a safe place for many. So it really takes sort of the fortitude to say, look, I'm going to give it a try. I'm going to learn from it. I will be better at the end of this. And so if you just change, 1% every day of something you do, you know, how you send out emails, what your emails are, like 1% every day, a year from now, you're going to be miles ahead of where you are right now. If you try to change it all at one time, I guarantee you it's going to be probably too much to absorb personally and or for your team and your business or your practice. And so those little pivots every day are a way to lean into all that is now available to us from a technology standpoint. And not all of it may fit for you, but at the end of the day, if you keep the patient at the center of those decisions that you make, you will always, always be going in the right direction.
Tiffany, I'm actually making it a point to display your analogy there with data and oil and how it needs to be refined in order before it's used. Thank you very much for your insights, your enthusiasm, and your authenticity and being authentic and you're very candid with us. How do you stretch yourself or lift others in the latest project of yours? What can we look forward to that you're working on now or next?
Yeah, thank you for asking the question. I would say that I have talked a lot about the power of businesses connecting with their customers and or patients and improving that relationship by leveraging technology. But I want to sort of shine a light and kind of where I've been spending a majority of my time over the last probably 6 or 7 months is making sure that the people who work for you feel equally inspired, enabled, and capable to try things and fail and, you know, learn through it. The fastest way to get customers or patients in this case to love your company or brand is to get your employees to love their job. And so how do you, you know, make sure that when your people show up every day, that they're happy? Because if they're happy, they're going to provide better service and better care to your customers or patients. So make sure that all the things I just described to you, if you make it too hard for your employees to set up an appointment or to cancel an appointment or to get, you know, information from another doctor or facility or whatever it might be, try to make that as easy as possible, because they are the ambassadors of what you do. And if they're happy, it goes a long way to making sure that your customers and patients will be happy. Those two things in combination are extremely powerful. So that's the work that I've been doing on lately, this sort of connection between employee experience and satisfaction and engagement and customer experience and how those two things in concert really can propel a brand or company or practice forward.
Thank you. Thank you, Tiffany. I know that, as I often say on All Out Coach, where the slogan is stretch yourself, lift others. Hearing you speak globally or reading a lot of your work, your newsletter always stimulates me to stretch myself and lift others. So I look forward to sharing this episode here with others. I'm going to upload it to my podcast. Make sure to subscribe to the All Out Coach podcast, as well as to the What's Next podcast of Tiffany Bova. It's a top 50 sales podcast. She is the personification of the types of leaders and mentors who don't just say you've arrived at your destination, but who ask you, where's your next destination? Thank you, Tiffany.
Oh, thank you for having me, Tim. I hope I did justice. You know, I don't get very deep in particular industries, but you know, I am passionate about getting better healthcare for myself. So, you know, if my doctor happens to listen to this, please, you know, let's make some different investments. That would be awesome.
You absolutely did, Tiffany.
All right. Thank you so much. Bye, everybody.
Oh, we do have a few questions.
Oh, okay.
So if you don't mind sticking around. So there's a question from Lindsay Cohen. Oh, it's a comment. Okay, there. So she thanks you. I just wanted to acknowledge her as well. Kirk Shepard, a renowned physician and leader in the pharmaceutical industry. He's thanking you as well. And Sazan again. As well. So thank you very much, Tiffany. These are just last minute comments.
Oh, good. Great. Yeah. And then I'd offer up to everybody, you know, who listened in to follow me on LinkedIn, you know, and also give me feedback back. Look, you know, I am always open to, you know, hearing what resonated, what didn't, and what are the things that, you know, I can improve upon as well, because I do a number of these. And so if there's things that maybe really resonated with you, that I'd love to hear it. So please do connect with me.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tiffany, again.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.